It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Fitzy and Shime on WEEI.
Albert Breer reported this week the Patriots ownership has called around the NFL on advice about how to handle a young quarterback. I'm curious if you've heard that report and what your reaction to it is.
Yeah, once again, I don't read anything or see anything that's out there in the press. I'm sure we got a lot invested in the guy, and I have a good feel of how to get him ready, and I think it's showing so far. So not worried about that at all. I'm here to develop Drake May, and that's what I'm going to do.
Well, and Gerard Mayo, as we said, was very complimentary this week. Drake May, from my estimation, has developed pretty nicely. So do you think the current coaching staff needs any help handling a young quarterback?
I don't think so, no.
It was from yesterday's Jones and Teeth program here in the middays on WEEI, their weekly interview with Patriots offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt as part of our Patriots Fridays. And if you happen to miss it and you would like to hear the entirety of the interview, you can always subscribe to the podcast for each and every show on the program, Spotify, Apple Pods, or, of course, download the Odyssey app. Use the rewind feature during your day, wherever you happen to be. And you can catch all of your favorite WEEI programs, listen to your favorite podcasts, like Six Rings and Football Things, hashtag Dork Slammed, and so much more, anytime you want when it's convenient for you. So, Shime, I like the fact that Jones was very direct, had a pleasant interview with Alex Van Pelt. I know some of the interviews the boys have had with him recently have been, the coordinator himself said there have been some odd questions. But I like the fact that they gave him an opportunity to address the story from earlier in the week that Albert Breer from Sports Illustrated surfaced, which was that someone in ownership, the Crafts, who knows who, we're not accusing anyone, we don't know exactly who it was, but someone in Patriots ownership reportedly had gone out and contacted people on other teams to find out if the Patriots were in fact preparing, grooming, and developing Drake May the right way. And you and I discussed this briefly the other night, but it's still, now that Van Pelt has had a chance to respond to it, I think he did an excellent job with it as well. Good for him for being confident and cocksure about it. It just still seems odd. Wouldn't it be a little hurtful if somebody, or at least, you know, make you feel a little squeamish if you found out somebody was going around finding out, like, you know, if the job you were doing was good enough and they had to ask people outside of your industry and organization if they were doing it? And do we still think this might be a nothing burger? Could this be Mac Jones PTSD organizationally? What do you think?
I would absolutely be pissed, first of all. Like, I would be, I almost wanted to swear there. I would be so mad. I would be so frustrated with whoever is in charge if that was the case, if I was Alex Van Pelt, or even Gerard Mayo, for that matter. And so I still don't know what to make of this report. It's frustrating for me personally. Like, I'm looking at it, I'm like, this doesn't make sense, when Burt Breer reported it. And then even Tom Curran on our station kind of backed the idea and thought it was a good idea. I'm like, wait, what? Wait, hold on, time out.
Wait,
what?
Wait, he did?
Yeah, oh yeah, with the afternoon show on Thursday. Joe, you could probably find that cut. It's in my folder. And like, he even kind of supported the idea that they would be doing something like that. And so it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I don't get it. I don't know why you would be asking anybody, especially in the middle of the season, outside of your organization. It's one thing if you're like, you know, when you have a network of friends and relationships in football, guys that are no longer playing, guys that are no longer in front offices, you look at Bill Belichick, right? He has guys like the Mike Lombardis of the world where he can kind of spitball ideas off of. That's fine, but why are you doing? Why are you asking people from other teams in the middle of the season if you're handling your rookie QB the right way when you've just won 2 out of 3 and could have won 3 in a row?
They are doing it, and I think that's the due diligence you should engage in when you watch your young quarterback who's the 3rd overall pick, and you understand, as Robert Kraft has said to me, coach and quarterback are the 2 things that you need to succeed in the league, period, end of story. So if that's the case, and you think you have a keeper in Drake May, which on many levels I think they do, he's going to be here for the rest of the decade. Lord willing, it seems. So you want to make sure that the network around him is as good as it can be. We understand that the Patriots blew things up with Bill and really didn't have a succession plan in place because they did it a year earlier than they anticipated because of the results of 2023. So if Valley Stan Pelt was not your first pick and you've hired him, you should, as the end of that year comes, right now, say, what do we want to do going forward?
I'm stumped.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Like, you'd think, I mean, you have eyes. Just look at the kid. He looks like he's growing. He's progressing in the right direction. Yeah, the offense might not look scheme-wise how you want it to look. The personnel around Drake May doesn't look great, but that's things that you should be asking Elliot Wolf about, not asking people outside of the organization, right? You should be asking Elliot Wolf and AVP, like, all right, what's the deal? Are we, A, going to get more players on offense to help Drake May? And B, what's the scheme? Do you have a plan for how this scheme is going to evolve, or is this exactly how you see it? And depending on those answers, then you can make decisions in the offseason about how you want to move forward with the team. You don't need to go ask other people for that information.
You specific, like, okay, so for those that don't know, the Patriots interviewed 12 offensive coordinator candidates.
Yep.
12.
Yep.
And that's why I refer to Alex Van Pelt as candidate 12, because he was the 12th, and he was ultimately the one they hired. Now, a layer of intrigue that can be added, side note, to this weekend's game as well, is the Rams come to town with their tight ends coach / passing game coordinator, Nick Caley. He used to be the tight ends coach here for years. He's beloved by many in the organization. And the Patriots did, in fact, offer him a very handsome salary, excuse me, to come back to town and take the job that he was not offered by the Belichick organization, but that Dante Scarnecchia and many others endorsed him for. He liked it too much in Los Angeles, had a good thing going, is learning from Sean McVay. Obviously, that's an offense-first team, so it makes sense for him to go branch out from his knowledge base that he established here. And maybe he also had his doubts, maybe not about Jerod Mayo, but just how things had turned over post-Belichick, thinking, why don't I avoid any potential tire fires or dumpster madness if that were to evolve in New England and stay in this stable organization where I'm on an upward trajectory where I may get more offers to be an OC or maybe even a head coach one day. Who knows? So that adds a little extra layer of intrigue sauce to the 7-layer dip of tomorrow's game. As far as the hiring of Alex Van Pelt, we were all on board with the idea, like, nope, not the sexiest candidate. Nope, not who I would have probably gone out and hired. Nope, does not bring in something that is dynamic, new, or progressive. He's a West Coast traditionalist. He was there in Cleveland for a long time. He worked with Stefanski. He was a quarterback himself. So obviously he knows how to play the position. He knows how to call a base-level offense. But the most important thing he does, like last year, he got old Joe from the sofa off, you know, out of the gym in Jersey and turned him into a stud for the final third of the season. And look, Flacco would probably be the first one to tell you, like, yeah, I kind of wish I had AVP back because I was playing good football. He's doing that level of his job, and he's, to me, it looks like he's doing that part of it well. If the scheme doesn't fit, that's fine. But as far if that's what the Crafts are interested in, if that's what the organization is curious about, I can understand that. Like, do we think this is our favorite offense? Do we think this is something he's going to thrive in? But as far as the way he's growing and developing, the hitch, the footwork, all those other like BS talking points we heard about heading into the draft, I'd say that's where Alex Van Pelt is doing good work. And so, yeah, you should probably just leave him alone for the first year and then review the tape as opposed to in the middle of it. Just, hi, everybody. We're going to stop the movie halfway through. Are we enjoying it thus far?
Dude, it's wild. Drake May has played 4 full games. Like, I don't know. Let the offense be for the rest of the season. Like, just sit back and relax. Like, you already know the quarterback's good. You can tell he's talented. You don't need to ask other people about it. So let the rest of the season play out and then go back, check the tape. Is the offense good? Like, is the offensive scheme good enough? Right now, I would say probably not, but you also have to weigh, well, Alex Van Pelt's doing a really good job with Drake May, so do I really want to, like, let him go? Like, I think he's been a major reason why Drake May is having success. Maybe I don't want to let him go. Maybe the simplification of the offense is fine for now, and then that's something we can do in a year or two once I feel like Drake is more established and more comfortable. Maybe this first offseason, we work on getting more talent on the offense. We leave Alex Van Pelt in place, and then in the offseason of 2025 into 26, maybe then we look at it and go, okay, we have talent around our young quarterback. Maybe now we switch offensive coordinators. Like, you don't need to go ask other people for this. You're plenty capable of doing this on your own within your own organization. At least that's what I would think. And so it just makes everybody, this report makes everybody look incompetent. Everybody. And that, I think, is what is most infuriating to me.
You've got a rookie head coach that you handpicked 5 years ago and said, this is the next person to lead our organization forward. And you entrusted him, alongside Elliott Wolf and others, to handpick who they wanted to steer the offense, the defense, the special teams, many aspects of the team, which has a dearth and deficit of talent because of what happened with the previous administration. And it's going to take them a while to dig out from where they were and turn the ship around in the canal. And just when things were settling down, like the nerve endings were a little frayed and things were a little too hyper a couple weeks back, saw a football team, the blowback from former players, maybe even inside the building. They had a big win last week. They had the big comeback against the Titans with the 12-second highlight and 7-yard Hail Mary to Ramondre that basically just put everyone on board like, well, they nailed the most important pick, so now you can truly start building this team. You've got other people, you got other players on the team that people are complimentary of right now. And you've also got a bunch of undrafted free agents, Jags and Hoodats on the team that are playing well above and beyond pay grade, like Del Pettis and Christian Ellis and Jaquelin Roy. The Patriots are becoming, if not a feel-good story, like an interesting tale this year. And now all of a sudden, like, well, it's been a few weeks since we had a controversy. Why don't we let everybody know that we're asking around to see if Alex Van Pelt is the guy? You don't want to do it. In wanting to avoid a Mac Jones situation, you may end up Mac Jones-ing Drake May if you take him from an offensive coordinator in UNC, his final season. Then you give him AVP year one, and then if you're like, well, we probably should make a change, then you get another coordinator next year. I'm with you. Maybe that isn't the scheme ultimately that works, but bring more talent in. Stabilize the offensive line. Get a feel for calling games. Figure out what you want the real identity of this football team to be now that you've seen a large part of the comportment of this kid's talents, and then figure it out. But to do it mid-season and let the story get out, yuck.
As the 413 says on the text line, it makes the path look weak.
Yeah, and it but
weak. Very good call, 413. There is a little weak sauce on that. Yes.
It's just, most importantly, like, it's the owner. It's not Gerard Mayo that reached out to other people. It's not Elliott Wolf. It's not AVP. It is ownership. Like, I thought that they wanted to be completely hands off for the most part on football stuff. Like, they're going to let their football guys take care of it. That's kind of why, like, Elliott Wolf is where he is and Gerard Mayo is the head coach. And, like, it's like, yeah, we're going to let these guys take care of it. You know, we'll just be kind of overseeing everything. But, you know, they can handle it. They're football guys. And then you're asking around to see if you're doing a good job evaluating your young quarterback. Like, it just. Everything just doesn't make sense to me.
You excited?
Well, we are, but at the same time, we too are curious. 617-779-7937. How do you folks feel about the story this week? How do you think Alex Van Pelt is doing? And I'm sure most of you are confident Drake May is on an upward trajectory and developing appropriately. But if you've got thoughts on the subject, you've got a couple of guys that would love to hear from you. And of course, if you are in need of trending sports news, we got a guy for you right now. His name is Joe Braverman. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brian Elway was running around, throwing, you know, launching balls, trying to try all these aggressive throws. And again, this is the 0.001% comparison for May. But that's the guy where I was trying to come up with some high-end comp. And I was like, that's really who I think of, because the looseness of the athlete, being able to throw a missile wherever he wants, that competitiveness, sometimes that, like, he's not a dummy. I call him a golden retriever, but Elway was a coach's kid, obviously, very smart, but he would still try stuff. You know, yeah. Still trying, like, still push the ball. He honed it in as the years went along. You know, shoot, the Broncos drafted Tommy Maddox for a reason. But really, it was just that kind of loose athlete, that big arm. And that's where, like, I see the ideal version of him becoming.
That was Nate Tice on the Bill Simmons podcast this week. Yet again, more love for Drake May. And if you missed any of that, or rather you want to get some more Drake May love, then don't forget tomorrow morning at WEEI.com to take a read for the Sunday 7, the weekly news and notes column, the baton of which was passed to me by Andy Hart several months ago that I proudly carry on. Dan Orlovsky, your boy, Shime. I don't even know if he's your boy or if he's anybody's boy, but he does a good job on the Espen on Wake Up, It's Touchdowns or whatever the hell they call that show. Good morning, sports. He did a breakdown this week. He's the guy, like, this is the Drake May effect. Drake May has gone from, don't play this kid, you're going to get him killed, he's going to need so much longer to develop, this is at least a two-year benching, the worst take of the year, the icy, you know, Gruden says, got me feeling nicey, this is the one that's got me feeling icy. The Merrill Hodge take from before the draft, drafting Drake May will get you fired. You take this quarterback and, you know, you're going to, you'll be out of a job in a couple months, this kid's a mess. Oh, really? How's that working out for everyone else? How's that working out for everyone that said, don't take this kid? How's that working out for the people that said people would be out of jobs?
Drake May will get you fired.
There it is. Thank you. Thank you, Merrill, you bozo.
That guy was so dumb. I don't understand how people can look at Drake May and not see success in the future. Like, he's just, the talent is all there. Everything he does, everything he's shown you is the ability to do all of it. It's just a matter of kind of reining it in and making sure that you don't get, like, out over your skis. And that's kind of where we're at with Drake, and he's just going to get better the more opportunity he gets, the more coaching he gets, all of it.
Let me ask you a question before we get into something earlier that you surfaced from the sports books. So let's say we're looking into next year's draft. We're looking into free agency. We look back at how he operated when he was at North Carolina. Looking at what's available in the free agent crop, and it ain't that great, and looking who's available for pass catchers in the upcoming draft, and sadly, this seemed to have been the much better receiver draft, and that didn't look that great as well. What kind of offensive talent do you think will thrive with Drake May, or rather, what kind of player do you think they need to start looking for most? Like, is he available on free agency? Is he in that draft? Or do they maybe have to engineer a trade for the perfect fit to help him next level this offense?
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. I think Drake is, the way Drake plays football, he can work with a lot of different styles of receiver. And so I think a guy like T. Higgins actually would fit great. I thought heading into this season and the way he was playing, the guy I would have loved to have seen come here would have been a guy like Chris Godwin. But with that injury, I just don't know how healthy he's going to be and everything. I thought
his ankle, poor guy, his ankle literally went. Oh my God.
Yeah. Like, to me was like the perfect guy to kind of fit with Drake, because I felt like Drake, he could play in that intermediate zone, which I think Drake thrives in, but then he was also really good after the catch. So that's kind of what I would focus on, right? Even like a lot of guys in the San Francisco model, those Deebo Samuel types that are really good in the intermediate space but can also be good downfield, I think are guys that could really help Drake in his development going forward, and guys that he would really thrive with.
Yes, I agree. Who was his number one receiver his junior year? It was
Or did he wait? Did he come out after his junior year?
No, so his junior year it was Josh Downs.
So he did graduate. Okay, so
and then it was junior, senior, his final year it was Quintez Walker.
That's right, because Sam Howell was there prior to. That's right.
They had
some sneaky good quarterbacks come out of. Who knew North Carolina would turn into a quarterback factory like this?
Well, no, I mean, do you remember Mitch Trubisky?
I mean, hey, he had a 12.
He was a good college quarterback. But not such a great pro. Yes, I do remember Mitch Trubisky as well. So it was Josh Downs' his junior year. He's a pretty excellent part of the Colts offense as well, and I'm sure you're all hyped up in the 2 o'clock hour to start talking gambling and props, because I know you think we got a live dog in an AFC South versus AFC East showdown. Josh Downs is good. Quez Walker, as well. I mean, everyone's on board with T. Higgins. Are you in the, I think T. Higgins can be a wide receiver one or wide receiver 1A-ish type of guy? Would he start to unlock things?
Yeah, I think he absolutely could. I am starting to worry a little bit about the injuries. Last year, he wasn't super healthy. This year, he hasn't been super healthy. But part of me feels like this year is in large part because of the whole contract situation. So I don't know if that, kind of like Lamar a couple years ago, I don't know if that's exactly because he's fully injured or because of the contract or what the deal is there. So that to me is a big question mark. But I like T. Higgins. I like what I've seen from T. Higgins. The splits when it comes to the Bengals, when T. Higgins is on the field versus when he's off the field, they're insane. And for a large portion of this season, when he was on the same field as Ja'Marr Chase, like, he was getting more targets, he was getting more yards, more catches, everything. I think T. Higgins is a legit number one receiver on just about any team. I think he'd be great here. I just don't know that the Patriots will target him, and that's kind of what I'm worried about. I want them to spend money, but I'm not convinced that they're going to spend at the top of the receiver market right away.
And there's no chance in the world that Ja'Marr Chase gets to the open
not
market
a shot.
As well. Nope.
If he somehow gets to the free agent market, the Cincinnati Bengals should be handed the award for the dumbest team in NFL history.
In the history. If I were after that game that they should have won 9 days back, that awesome Thursday night football game against the Ravens, they got hosed on that 2-point conversion at the end. But the refs are going to ref. I thought, you know what? Maybe Ja'Marr Chase was right in playing this year out. And wanting not just a dollar more than Justin Jefferson, whose average annual value is $35 million. And quite honestly, it's money well earned and money well spent by the Vikings. He's going to be the first $40 million receiver. I'd pay it in a heartbeat.
Oh, dude, he's awesome. You saw him in that last game.
He's got like 5,000 receiving yards this year.
He has 1,000 through like halfway through the season. Granted, Joe Burrow is also having a great year, which I didn't necessarily expect this year because there were health questions entering the season. But I mean,
where
Ja'Marr
was this
Chase
Joe Burrow
awesome.
Earlier, dude? I continue to say, like, it's okay to love. I know we're so like New England focused and we can be a little regionally myopic around here. Sorry, folks. This is not a critique, rather, this is just an honest assessment of the way we roll, because I know who he is, and I'm one of us too. But it's okay to love other players. That, like, our kids grow up wearing other jerseys as well, even though they've got a closet full of Gronks and Edelmans and Bradys and Bledsoes and whatnot. I freaking love. First of all, I'm gonna root all my parts and bits off for the Detroit Lions to win the Super Bowl this year, because
that'd be awesome.
How much I love Ben Johnson's offense. How much I love Jahmyr Gibbs. The Goff story is awesome.
Amon Ross Brown is the best.
Oh, God. Seriously. And again,
criminally underrated.
The 2021 draft of the Detroit Lions should be hung in the Louvre.
Doesn't matter if you have one ass cheek and three toes. I will beat your ass.
I go ahead. Come on over here and do it, bro. I wouldn't mind it. Give me some Applebee's while you're at it.
I love that guy.
I freaking love that guy. I would do 1,000 Oklahomas with him and up downs if he needed me to.
Yep. I would do him against Derrick Henry, too.
Yeah, it's fine. Let it just actually crush me. Absolutely just maul me, throw me into the same orbit that he did Josh Norman years ago, and then just bare-ass me on the way back.
I think my favorite thing from that was when, you know how at Christmas time they have the Santa tracker, like, around the globe? Uh-huh. They did a Josh Norman tracker of where he's around the globe.
And it had that music.
So good.
That was so good. But I absolutely love watching Joe Burrow play quarterback, and I love watching the Detroit Lions play football, and I'll be rooting my ass off for them this year because I would love to see Detroit get theirs as well. And it would be a reward for a team that went about it the right way. They lived in the tank. They were the tank. They were the meme. They were even more Jets than the Jets. They were the Lions. Like, before anyone else,
they're the first ever franchise to go 0-16.
Yeah, that's right. Before, I was going to say, Joe, anyone had a winless season and made it cool. That was the Detroit Lions back in 2008 as well. That's where Stafford came from. And even though Stafford had to leave there and they had to take the contract, the baggage and the bloated corpse of Goff back, redeem him, and now turn him into one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the NFL, you surround him with talent. Their 2021 draft, Penei Sewell, Alif Raymond, the defensive tackle, and then Amon-Ra St. Brown. That's literally a franchise turnaround of a draft. That's what the New England Patriots need next year. Get a receiver, get a tackle, get some defensive depth. If you can do that, that's how you... Now, of course, it took the Lions till 2023 to make the playoffs. 2022, they barely missed. But, man, was it fun watching them knock out Rodgers in that final game in Week 18. So set your expectations, everybody.
But it'll be hard.
You've already got the quarterback. You just need the surrounding talent.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It's great in theory. But then, I mean, can we just look back at the 2002 draft for the New England, or 2022 draft for the New England Patriots? The only guys left on the team are Marcus Jones and Cole Strange, and we're pretty sure Cole Strange sucks. So it's like you had seven rounds.
Switch to
of
fullback or center, or otherwise he's toast.
Yeah, like you have seven rounds of draft picks, and the only guy you got out of that was Marcus Jones, who I like Marcus Jones, but like, okay, that's cool. Like, what? Like, do you really have faith in this front office and organization to draft three straight great players in a first, second, and third round?
We wasted our time watching him thinking he'd be at 104, hey, maybe.
Thanks a lot, McVay.
But they were right. Like, him and Les Snead laughed at you when you took Cole Strange, for good reason, by the way.
You know how they yell, like, who ordered the code red? I need to know, who ordered the Cole Strange?
You're damn right I did.
You're goddamn right I did. Oh, my God. I swear to God.
we're just in a state of delirium.
Marcus Jones is a quality football player. I know
he's a good football player. But
they were handing out torn labrums last year.
Returners aren't the ones that are going to like turn your franchise around,
right? He's a decent slot quarter. He's a good kick returner. I think he should get a couple looks on offense as well. Like, things happen when the ball gets in his hands. But otherwise, shame on me. Look, Hart made me take five laps of shame on the Six Rings postgame show for an article I wrote in 2022 after the Patriots with Bailey Zappi beat the Browns. Oh, quarterback by Jacoby Brissett. You don't say, huh? And I said, I cashed in early. I said, like, hey, dividends of a good 2022 draft are paying. Whoops. My bad.
Well, and it's not even that, Fitzy. Then you look at this year's draft, and it looks like, and it's early, but let's just say you kind of stumbled into Drake May because he was the third quarterback on the board, and you had the third pick, and you took Drake May, and he's really good. So I guess you get credit for that. But then Jalen Polk looks horrendous, and Caden Wallace has not been on the field a ton, but when he has been, hasn't been great.
No.
And that's your first three picks again.
Honestly.
Oh, God.
It's anxiety-inducing, but again, they nailed the quarterback. The thing I wanted to get to before we go to break, Shime, as well.
Yes.
Could you share with the audience what you found on one of your favorite wagering apps and why you think this may be the sneaky best value bet you can get in on now before it's too late?
Yeah, so this is, I really want to attention anybody who believes the Patriots have a chance to win on Sunday. I think that's key. If you believe the Patriots have a chance to win and you were thinking about maybe betting the money line, or you just like the idea of the Patriots winning on Sunday, I would recommend to you to go to the FanDuel Sportsbook and take a look at the Offensive Rookie of the Year odds. Because right now, Drake May is slated at 75-1. To win offensive rookie.
Wait, how much? No, I didn't think it was. I knew the odds were silly, but like.
+7,500, 75-1.
After Jaden Daniels has struggled the way he has the past 2 weeks?
Jaden Daniels is still -950. Now, Fitzy, the crazier thing, though, is that there is a major discrepancy. And when I say major, I mean like insanely big. Because when you look at sports books like DraftKings and BetMGM, they have Drake May at 25-1, which is much more reasonable and much more understandable. So I just recommend to anybody that if you like the Patriots to win Sunday, if they win Sunday and beat the Rams, in my opinion, they become live to beat multiple teams down the stretch here, including the Dolphins, the Colts, the Cardinals, and the Chargers, right? Like, they become live dogs in all those games. And so if they were somehow able to win a few of those, right? If they win Sunday, they get to four wins already. If you're looking at a possible 7-10, 8-9 season with Drake May at quarterback, even though he's only going to have played 12 games or so, it is basically if anything happens to Jaden Daniels insurance, right? Because we already know he's been dealing with a rib injury. He has struggled of late. They've lost two in a row.
See that gash on his hand they had to put crazy glue on the other night against the Eagles?
And this award is so quarterback heavy. I texted my guy Nick Costos about this. I wanted his take on it. He is a gambling guy to his core. He thought that his immediate reaction was, I would think Brock Bowers would probably win the award, but it's a bet I will take. That was Costos' reaction when I texted him earlier today. And so, like, to me, I just think if you like the Patriots Sunday, your intention was to bet the money line, just cut out, like, $10 and throw it on Drake May. One ham, $10, mm-hmm. wins you $750 if he wins Rookie of the Year. And it's really just a pizza bet in case something happens to Jaden Daniels because, like, I just... The award is so quarterback heavy, I just don't see Brock Bowers winning it. Like, unless he, like, absolutely pops off in the second half of the season here. Mac Jones almost beat Ja'Marr Chase, and Ja'Marr Chase had one of the greatest rookie seasons we've ever seen. And so, for me, the award is so quarterback heavy, I think there is a realistic chance that Drake May could be a Rookie of the Year, and 75-1 is simply too big of odds.
How do you not put a ham on that? I have no
100%.
Idea. 100%. You're absolutely right. Through nine games, by the way, eight games to go for the Raiders, Brock Bowers, in his rookie season out of Georgia, 57 catches, 580 yards, two tutties. Not bad. That,
like, he's probably going to have the most receiving yards by a tight end in the rookie season in NFL history, and that's great, but it's not what Ja'Marr Chase did his rookie season, right? It would take an insane pop-off in the second half of the season, getting balls thrown to you by Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell, by the way, who stink. It's not Joe Burrow throwing the ball to Brock Bowers. So I just think that every quarterback on the book is in play to beat Brock Bowers. And that includes Drake May if he wins games down the stretch, especially if they somehow supplant the Broncos in the standings. Then it immediately puts him ahead of Bo Nix, who's had a fine, not great season anyways.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm immediately dropping a ham on that during the commercial break, which we're going to get to right now. 617-779-7937 is your telephone number. When we come back, a little bit of a baseball pivot. Your Boston Red Sox, a.k.a. the Interest Kings, seem to be making way with the best available free agent, not just this year, in many a recent memory. Is it legitimate, or are the Sox just doing that because, you know, they're the Sox? We'll get into that a little bit more when we come back. It's FNS, Fitzy and Chime, on a Saturday here on EEI.
Did you order the
Cole Strange?
You have one bold prediction for the offseason. What is it, Pedro Martinez?
That the Red Sox go and get Juan Soto.
Oh.
Juan Soto. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The kind of bat and power that we need. New England will go cuckoo bananas.
Oh.
I'll be jumping on top of the dugout. I'll be the first one saying, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cuckoo bananas. Hey, by the way, great get for our pal Steve Peralta on the Section 10 podcast. Pedro Martinez, what a bite. Side note to that, Shine, before we get into the baseball, I just did a little goofball Instagram video yesterday. I want to chum the waters with it now, so in case anyone wants to call, or okay. Braverman, if you can look at the lines at 37937, maybe we can get into it more in the 2 o'clock hour in actual dialogue, but let me throw it out there now. Pedro Martinez is one of my two answers to this question. Which Boston sports legend would you want to sit down and have an evening of drinks with?
That's a good question.
That's a good one, and I think I already know who the other one is for you, Fitzy.
Go ahead, Joe. I would love to hear.
Did he wear number 12 for the Patriots?
No.
What?
I don't think Brady's got... Like, I wonder if Drinks with Brady isn't more Fox broadcaster Brady and not I'm the baddest MF-er on the world Brady.
Yeah, I kind of... I think I might go, like, Julian Edelman.
Okay.
I think Edelman would be good because he would give you all those Brady stories without Tom having to be there, which would be kind of fun. He seems like a relatively good time. So Edelman might be on my list.
Absolutely not.
See, Gronk's gonna, that's You won't be able to talk because it's just going to be, you know, dudes dancing shirtless and mayhem and binge drinks and shots and whatever else all night long. Try to think like, let's go in the Wayback Machine. Like, you could do Ortiz. Side note, I would recommend you don't do drinks with Ortiz in a casino. I'd say dip way back. The answer to my other one, Larry Bird.
Oh, okay, cool.
Just give me a huge rack of Gansetts. He was a notorious Miller Lite drinker, just a rack of Gansetts. And I just want to hear about, you know, A, he's a fascinating guy in the first place, and B, a notorious, you know, beer drinker, S talker and whatnot. Some stories I've heard about him from my pal John Tobin, who runs a lot of the comedy clubs in town and whatnot, who worked governmentally. Yeah, he's a character and a half. So, you know, and I get a chance to hear stuff about the Patriots. Give me some way back fun. So I'd go Pedro and Larry Bird. Those are my two.
That's pretty cool. That's a good list. Yeah. Pedro would be a lot of fun. I think Pedro would be cool. I would definitely want somebody from the Patriots dynasty. It would just be hard to choose. That's why I kind of lean Edelman. Oh, I mean, Randy Moss would be an absolute blast. Granted, he wasn't here a long time, but I would love to have drinks with Randy Moss.
Mossman would be fun, too. How about somebody, you know, you could also go, like, you know, in the Wayback Machine, like Red Auerbach. How about Stogies and a nice little, a couple of bourbons with Red Auerbach?
Okay, I'm into that.
See, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can go wherever you want to go with that one as well.
Bobby Orr.
All right. Okay, Joe. Right.
Bobby Orr would be probably a quality one as well. You could go have a nice Italian supper at Ray Bork's Tresca. Perhaps maybe you split a bottle of cab or something. Here, it was like to leave town and go win one for the Avs and then come home and have a micro parade thrown for you. It's just a fun one just to sort of chum the waters and get into there. But all right, let's get back to the Pedro sort of reminded me of that one. Are you buying that the question is very simple for me.
Okay.
Are you buying that the Red Sox are legitimately interested in Juan Soto because while they have some talent on the Major League roster, obviously, and they have a lot of talent purportedly coming up from the doubles and the triple A's of the world, their farm system's top 10. They've got like the number one prospect in baseball now with Anthony. I don't know what Marcelo Meyer is ever going to be. Personally, I think Kyle Teal may be it. Are you in on the idea that they want to get a superstar to pair up, have their Manny and Poppy with Soto endeavors? Are they going to pay $600 million so that they can have another powerhouse 10 years of profitability in the Fenway Sports Group? Or is this interest Kings 3.0 or 4.0? They're just driving the price up on the Mets or the Yankees so they can say to their fans, well, we tried. I personally wouldn't spend the $600. Give me a stud pitcher like Crochet in a trade, or maybe give me a Corbin Burns and a Teoscar Hernandez. Bring the kids up, and then we'd get after it. That's my plan. But that's just me. Braverman has told me the Play Tessie podcast approves of my plan. Where are you with this? Would you do it, Chime? And do you think the Sox are legitimately going to try to do it?
Yeah, you're damn right. I would do it. I think the Sox are just kings of interest. I think they like the idea of having their names out there. They're like, yeah, let's go interview Juan Soto. This will be fun. He likes us, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think they're actual competitors for Juan Soto, in my opinion. I don't think they're willing to pay the money. And I think that's kind of dumb. I think they should be making big moves. I think this is the whole bring the young kids up is all good in theory, but you're not the Tampa Bay Rays. You're a big market team. You're in Boston. Go pay some guys, trade for some guys, and let's get some actual legitimate stud talent out here, because what you've shown us the last couple of years hasn't been good enough.
Precisely. You know, look, it is another lefty for Fenway, but this kid is so damn good.
He's so awesome.
He's spectacular. He is legitimately spectacular. It will be kind of weird, though. He's a Boris client. Captain, you know, overplay his hand. Last year didn't do so well with Schnell in Montgomery. Probably looking for a redemption tour this year with the Soto. Hello, Soto. It's going to be a $600 million deal, which is banana pants to me. It kind of hamstrings your organization a little bit, but there's not a team the kid doesn't fit in with, and you get to also rob your division rival, anger their fans, frustrate the organization as well. It would be massive. I don't know. For some reason, it just doesn't feel like a fit. Four teams, by the way, in like 5 years. The Nationals, the Padres, the Yankees, and then whoever signs him next. Like, man, this kid, I'll give him this. He's a smart kid. He's, you know, can you imagine turning down like, nah, we're going to pass on the $420 million offer, and we're going to see if we can make 550 or six. Like, that's bonkers to me.
Yeah, it's insane, but I don't know. I just think he's very much worth it. Like, it's just, you need, like, legitimate superstars on this team. You don't have them. Jaren Duran's really, really good. He was, what, second-team All-Pro? Joe can correct me if I'm wrong there, but I think he got nominated or got elected second-team All-Pro in baseball, which is great. Like, that's good. That's awesome. But then it's like, then you have Rafael Devers, and then it's like a lot of young guys who are hoping to project. It's very, very little certainty. And I just think that you need to do a better job of bringing in legitimate, established superstar talent, pitching especially, and then even a bat or two. Like, I just, I don't know. I yearn for the Sox of old who, luxury tax be, go screw. I don't care. I'm going to pay out the wazoo and pay really good, talented players and put them on my team around my young core. And I think that's how you win in Major League Baseball. It's like, yeah, you have to be able to have talent in your system and kind of bring them up and bring them up the right way. But you have to supplement that young talent with established, legitimate superstars. And that is what the Sox have failed to do so far.
617-779-7937 is your telephone number. That is your 10-digit pathway to Drake May Talk. Patriots, Rams, predictions and analysis, Soto evals, and so much more when we come back for our finale of the FNS Fitzy and Chime program. Because we love football, because we love gambling on football, and because you do too, we'll get into our Week 11 preview. A lot of tasty games on the slate outside of Foxborough, Massachusetts tomorrow. And then we'll just clean up everything else. We may even amble into a little holiday talk because I feel like we are at that, we're at the fulcrum. We're at that crux of like, is it okay to start decorating for Christmas now? Should I have transitional like Thanksgiving or harvest themed decor up to go between Halloween and Christmas? I don't know. Let's get into it with you in just a couple minutes here on WEEI.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.